Blog Talk Radio.
Out there, and so, you know, we foster a lot of positivity and a lot of dreams on the show, and we want to encourage people, and so we just wanted to throw out there, you know, screw these terrorists. They can't stop France. They can't stop the U.S. from utilizing our freedoms. And so God bless you all over in France, and we may not get along all the time, but we certainly love you. So, now that I got that over with, and that was important, by the way, let's see who we got here. Oh, look around the studio. I spot over there the one and only J-Dub, Jeff Weiser. What's up, J-Dub? How you doing?
Oh, you know, I just got back from the coffee bar and got myself a donut.
Ah, lucky. Well, feel free to, you know, let me have a bite from over there at the other side of the studio.
Negative. This is Bavarian filled negative.
Oh, okay. Well, don't throw it, at least. Yeah, right. Mr. Hollywood, Joel Casey, how you doing?
What's going on?
There he is.
I woke up from the little cot that we had in the back. I pulled a big one last night, so, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll take it easy on you today. We've got an awesome guest today, the guy that I had the pleasure of working with on the very first feature film I ever did. Named Mark Valinsky. Mark is a true Renaissance man, and I call him that because he studied to be a doctor. He became a surgical podiatrist, and so he was cutting people's feet open, which we got to ask him about because I wonder what would cause someone to get, what would inspire someone to get into that field, because that's an amazing thing to do. He left medicine, went on to become a photographer and an actress, whoops, hope Mark's not listening, an actor, producer, cameraman, editor, all kinds of great stuff. This guy does it all, from being a surgeon to the world of the entertainment industry. He's going to be a blast to talk to. He'll be on with us here in about 20 minutes. Until then, we can have our usual discussion. How you fellas doing, man? You got anything you want to add about my little message to the people of France? I know we have some listeners there, so I know you guys are busy, but I hope you're tuning in.
Yeah, it's just, I was just in shock when I first heard the news. I really didn't want to believe it at first. But then
yeah, you messaged me right away, and I had heard and I was watching something on television. And I just went, Joel, you got it, man. You said it very accurately. It's frightening. And it's horrible.
Yeah, it's just, oh God, I'm really at a loss for words.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like I said, we may not always get along with our allies, but we are allies and we are friends. And yes, we have helped the French out in the past. They've helped us out as well. So, we're going to stand by those guys and wish them the best. There are no easy solutions here.
There's not. And, wow. Oof.
Yeah. It's a scary reminder. You know, what we do is all for fun, and sometimes we may take ourselves a little too seriously, although very rarely. but we do.
I will laugh at that.
Yeah. what we do is here is minimal compared to what's going on out there in the real world with real life problems. But enough of that depression stuff. We wanted to express our condolences and solidarity with those out there affected by these terror attacks. Let's kick their butts. All right. Moving on to something a whole lot more lighthearted and less important, but something we enjoy talking about on the show. Joel, how about some Hollywood news for us? Now, folks that are tuning in for the first time, don't worry, this is not Hollywood gossip, who's engaged to who or marrying this person and who cheated on this person and so on. We don't engage in the world of silly rumor and gossip here. This is Talk 34. We focus on what's going on with movies that are being made, rumors about castings, rumors about movies coming out. Joel keeps us up to date on that stuff. We don't traffic in gossip here. Just remember, Talk 34 is a Kardashian-free zone. Joel, what do you got for us today?
Yeah. All righty. I was going to mention this because I'm just a huge fan of the film. Val Kilmer has went on record that a Top Gun 2 is in the works, and
what?
He will be coming back as Iceman.
No way. Oh, my. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm serious.
Top Gun 2. Wow. Now, this is an actual sequel, not a reboot, then.
No. It will be a sequel. There was a sequel being set up a couple years ago, but that was before the unfortunate what happened with Tony Scott. So it got scrapped for a little while. And basically, from what I've been reading, it would be about the new generation of pilots. And I believe Iceman and Maverick would be kind of the mentors.
I see. Okay. Well, wow. Maybe we can have a Tombstone too, then, since Mr. Kilmer's back here. We'd have to make stuff up, you know, that never actually happened. But Tombstone's my favorite. I love Val Kilmer. Tombstone's my favorite performance of his, but Top Gun's right up there in a close second. How awesome. That to me, that sounds like a sequel that I actually want to see, which is not always the case. Oh, I think we lost
Joel. No, I'm here. My mic cut out, so damn weather.
Right. Yeah, it is. For those of you tuning in, whether it's live or whether you're listening to the podcast, which most of you listen to the podcast, which is fine. I don't edit these shows, so it all works. Those of you tuning in, it's in the state of Washington right now. We have this unbelievable storm going on where it looks like El Nino has bumped into the jet stream and brought us some climate change, at least for a while. We're a rainforest. It is coming down here, and there's a lot of wind blowing. If this show ends early, it's because we lost power and I would have no internet connection. So let's try not to do that. But then again, mankind is completely unable to control the weather, even to this day and age of high-tech gadgets. So if we got to say goodbye quickly, you won't hear us say goodbye. We'll just be gone. It's crazy out there. Is anybody actually? I ventured out there because the dogs needed to go, and they were not happy being out there. I was not happy. I'm staying inside as much as I can. You guys seen this out there?
Yeah. I went. I was doing my own rendition of Singing in the Rain.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that sounds exciting. Thanks, Joel. Next time, just a video, man.
But it was actually stopping traffic worse than the rain, so I had to stop.
Well, you are the kind of guy that can stop traffic in so many different ways. Anyway, sorry, we got on to weather and we got away from Hollywood. My apologies. Okay, what else you got? Joel, you got some, please tell me, and we don't rehearse this, folks, so if he's stumped, it's my fault. Tell me you got some comic book movie news for us, because that's kind of our thing here.
Sort of, but not really. The comic book news has been on the low key. I'm waiting for trailers to come up, kind of like Batman or Superman and X-Men Apocalypse. But a lot of the comic book film news has just been on the low key. I did want to share this, however. As you know, Marvel and Transformers are doing this, and DC is starting to do it. Variety reports that Universal Pictures and Vin Diesel are planning out a whole Fast and Furious cinematic universe with spin-offs and prequels on the way.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. As long as Disneyland doesn't make a park for it, I'm happy.
Well, Universal Studios will probably have something set up for it. I mean, they already have the Fast and Furious thing. They have a Fast and Furious ride. So.
Great. So Fast and Furious Land.
Yeah, Fast and Furious Land.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I can make such a terrible joke right now, but it would be such bad taste.
And we are, of course,
and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, let's move on. So what else you got for us, man?
No problem. I did want to share this because Jeff's a huge music guy. HBO is going to be coming out with a new television show called Vinyl. It's being produced by Mick Jagger and Martin Scorsese. It's a 10-episode series which is set in the 1970s New York and explores the sex and drug-addled music business at the dawn of punk, disco, and hip-hop through the eyes of a record label president. And the trailer is already online.
That sounds absolutely amazing. Scorsese and Mick Jagger?
Yep.
That's awesome.
And
it's
going to be on HBO, so they're going to go all out on it. And from what I'm reading, they got the creator of Boardwalk Empire and the writer of Wolf of Wall Street to help executive produce and showrun the series.
Wow. Okay, I'm looking forward to that. What's it called, do you know?
It's called Vinyl. It should be debuting in February of next year, 2016.
Right on. That sounds awesome.
And
J-Dub, we got to get your music on there.
I'm watching it.
Yeah.
One of the cast members in the series is Ray Romano in a dramatic role.
What? Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Olivia Wilde.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, me too. Olivia Wilde, the beautiful Olivia Wilde, will be in it. And this really good character actor is the lead role, Bobby Cannavale. If you saw him so you know who I'm talking about. He's a fantastic actor. It's just, it's about time he got his own, was the lead in a TV series, because that guy could just once circles around a lot of people.
Yeah, he's somebody who absolutely loves and adores character actors. That guy is fantastic. That's awesome to hear.
He's
gonna show off.
Oh yeah, you know he's gonna steal every scene in the show. He's gonna steal it. So when that comes out, I'll do a good review on it. But as we're not switching to comic book news, Stephen King book news. Have you ever read The Dark Tower?
Long time ago, yes, I did.
Okay, so it's been in. It's been tried to be turned into a film so many times over the last decade or so, but this could probably kick it in the high gear. Matthew McConaughey is being sought for a key role in the film adaptation of the novel saga, The Dark Tower.
Wow.
And people are thinking that he's going to play the lead role, but on the other hand, it's said that he's being offered the film's villain role, Randall Flagg, a.k.a. the Man in Black.
Sweet. I'd love to see McConaughey playing a bad guy.
Oh, yeah, me too. And this is, they must have a lot of faith in this because they've already set a release date for the first film, January 13th, 2017.
Wow. Nice. Great idea. That sounds like, that's one that you've been expecting to get made for a while.
Yeah. And from what they're saying, they're doing a really cool creative approach to this. They will be turning it, apparently there's also going to be a tie-in television series in development as well.
What? Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so basically they would take those characters in the films, have the same actors that are playing them and do like a little mini series on, like, let's say a premium channel like HBO or Showtime or something like that. So because since the books are all so long, they figured, well, we should do this. It'll help tie everything in really well.
I can't think of anything that's been done that's like that at all. I like the idea. It's an opportunity to really build an audience that way and get people involved. Reminds me, not that there are any Game of Thrones films, but they love to get the audience involved in any way possible. So it sounds similar. I like the idea.
Yeah, it's going to be something I'm really excited for because I've read the books. At one point, there was talk of Javier Bardem being the gunslinger, but that kind of fell through. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, sounds awesome. We've got to wait a while, but it sounds awesome.
Oh, no, I'm still here.
Every time we talk about Matthew McConaughey, it seems like you're drooling on the microphone. What's going on, man? I mean, it's okay to admit.
I'm sorry.
You got a thing for Matthew.
He's kind of my man crush. I'm not going to lie, actually.
We all got him.
I can't help it. I can't help it.
Yeah. Mine's Johnny Depp. So.
The reason why I just love the fact over the last couple of years that he has taken more serious roles. He's not just channeling it in anymore or just doing romantic comedies. He's actually challenging himself, and it's really good to see that.
It is, and you know what? You want to see him acting his butt off. Watch the first season of True Detective because he was incredible, and he played a completely different character than you would normally think of for Matthew McConaughey. It was a great show.
Oh, God, yeah. It was that really – I was already sold on him before, but then what he was able to do with that role, it was poetic.
Yep. He was so amazing. I remember watching and going, you know, I already like this guy, but wow, he can act too. That's not fair. You know.
Oh, man, yeah. I could talk about Matthew McConaughey all day if I wanted to, but...
Yeah, I noticed that. Anyway.
I did want to mention, I got some cool news. As you know, I don't know if you're aware, ABC greenlit a second season of Agent Carter.
Oh, yeah?
And they announced a premiere date, January 5th, 2016.
Right on. That bodes well for a close friend of mine who has some skin in the game of anything having to do with Captain America. So it's good news.
Yeah, and
they'll like that.
And that's my female crush.
Hayley Atwell. Oh man, dude! Back when she did the, I think it was on Stars or Encore. I think it was Stars, and it was a miniseries called The Pillars of the Earth. And I had read the book, and it was fantastic. And she just was so amazing. She's gorgeous. And I just remember watching this and going, how have I not heard of this girl? What's going on, girl? Finally, people know who Hayley Atwell is, as they should. I got a crush on her, too.
She's just gorgeous. She has that old-school 1940s Hollywood look to her.
Yeah. Yep. She's got it nailed. Ain't that the truth?
And I wanted to kind of mention this. Agent Carter is stepping up its episodes. Instead of doing 8 episodes this upcoming season, it will do 10 episodes. And like it did last year, it's going to bridge the gap between Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s winter finale and its spring premiere. So.
Okay. All right. Cool. Good for Agent Carter. Good for Hayley Atwell. That's fun.
Yeah, it's kind of a refresher because ABC, as you know, owned by Disney, which owns Marvel, they're doing something really unique since it's still set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe just, you know, after the first Captain America film. So it's really nice to see networks networks are now going the cable route, ordering less episodes of television shows but airing them continuously.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the way things are going.
Yeah, and I love it. I think it's brilliant. And because for the longest time, my biggest problem with television shows was from September to May, they would air 22 episodes, but then they'd air like 8 weeks of new episodes, then take like a month off, air 2 episodes, take 3 weeks off, air 3 episodes, take 2 weeks off, and just it would get so frustrating for someone like myself who's trying to keep up with all this, you know, these repeats and whatnot. And if you just showed it just continuously, people will appreciate that more.
Yeah. No, I like the idea. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be fun.
Oh, and I did want to share some of this news. As you know, you gave me a little project to work on this week. go on the Hallmark channel and look up some of the most cheesiest films that they have set up for the Christmas season. And
I'm so glad you remembered your assignment.
Let's just say it took a lot of vodka and to get through a lot of this. So here's my first one. Here's the first one.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Hallmark Channel's Christmas films. So please don't enjoy them because these are bad.
My wife wants to hear this.
Okay, here we go. The first one, the Santa suit. A selfish toy company CEO is changed into a Santa lookalike. I can't even say this with a straight face. A Santa lookalike to help him gain a fresh perspective. And the lead character is played by Kevin Sorbo.
Wow. Okay. I'll be watching that because my wife has them all on during the holiday season.
And this one, here's the next one. A lot of these titles have Santa in it, just to let our listeners understand. The Santa Incident. This one's even more outlandish. After St. Nick's sleigh is shot down by Homeland Security, a nurse takes in Santa while he recovers from the fall and deals with the prying eye of the FBI. Despite the setback, Santa still needs to make toys.
Hallmark Channel going all out with an action movie. That's awesome.
Yep.
If we could only get action figures.
Oh, God. They would be making a fortune off those people. Okay. Now, changing it to a very sappy romantic, Window Wonderland. Two rivals vie for the head window designer spot at a department store during the busy Christmas season, but they soon discover some common ground. Wink, wink.
Wow, well, I'm looking forward to all of those. Okay, not really, but I'll be watching them all because, like I said, my wife watches. It's like Saturdays and Sundays, I do get my football games. But outside of that, it's always on the Hallmark Channel, and sometimes I have to wait until the second quarter. You know how it is. But, maybe
not Hallmark. Work careers go to die.
Oh,
yeah.
Not that I wouldn't take an offer from Hallmark. I'd sign a 10-picture deal in a heartbeat. Shoot. You know? Those are films, though, that reach certain people. You know?
Your character, you would be a Santa, but everybody is assuming you're a homeless person.
Yeah, the homeless Santa. Well, you know what? I'm going to pitch that. I'm going to pitch that to Hallmark. I like the idea a lot. Well, straight up.
Here's the story, okay? So it starts, the movie starts on a very cold day in December where Mark sleeps outside of a department store. And he's just always sleeping outside. The manager is this beautiful, beautiful female that's way out of Mark's league who suddenly pities Mark. And has been wanting to hire someone to be a Santa, and she notices Mark's ratty, nasty beard, and says,
hey.
"You know what?
No.
I'm going to bring you in. I'm going to bring you in, and I'm going to give you a job, and I'm going to help you out. And then it goes, of course, you know, does the typical Hallmark thing, completely PG, where you have an implied love scene, and then that everyone loves, and then credits.
No, but the girl falls in love with Mark, realizing how well he interacts with her niece and nephew, since she's the strict aunt who ignores him all the time, is watching him over the holidays.
That sounds like real life. That's too close to home. I can't do that.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that.
Yeah, that'll destroy the holidays for me. And, well, Joel, we're going to get back to all things Hollywood here in a bit, but right now it's time to bring in our guest for the day. He was kind enough to join us here on Talk 34, a true Renaissance man out of Chicago and also out of Rochester. This guy does everything in the world, and he does it well. Please give a Talk 34 welcome to a dear friend and a brilliant man, Mr. Mark Valinsky. Hey, Mark, thank you for coming on the show.
What a pleasure, Mark. Great to hear from you again.
Hi, Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Can you guys hear me? Hi, guys. Can you guys hear me well enough?
We got you. Yeah, okay, you're good. We got our music guy, J-Dub, on the line, and also our Hollywood guy, who you probably just heard, Joel Casey. So, we're all excited to talk to you about your career and what's going on these days in the world of filmmaking and so on. So
sure.
Yeah, Mark, you are a producer, you have done editing, directing, teaching. Aren't you a runway photographer as well, or do you photograph?
I did a lot of the A-list events in Hollywood for a while, and I was getting a reputation as a very, very good photographer, and then it hit me. I came here to be on the other side of the red carpet, so
sure.
I stopped doing, except for maybe the real A-list ones that I may be interested in. I stopped doing the runway photography focusing more about getting my photography books done and my works in galleries, and then obviously expanding my acting and producing careers.
Excellent.
It was very hard for people of Hollywood to understand how a guy with a camera still wants to be an actor. And so I was starting to get pigeonholed in an area that, as much as I love and still do, it is not the reputation I wanted to develop over the years as a red carpet photographer.
Sure, sure. I've seen some of your work, though, and it's fantastic. I can understand why you've got the reputation you have. You got an eye for that sort of thing. Do you photograph the other things too, or do you just do events?
Oh, no, I've had a camera in my hands. It's a very interesting story. I've had a camera in my hand since I was a teenager. I grew up in Rochester. I was born in Chicago, as you told the audience, but I grew up in Rochester, New York, which is the home of Eastman Kodak. And my mom had worked there and always had a camera taking pictures of the family, and I just one day picked it up. I've never really been formally trained, but recently one of my images was selected for a digital display in the Louvre in Paris. So I'm quite proud of that. That just happened a couple of months ago. So, yeah, I know.
Wow.
It's pretty incredible. It's something that I
in the
was
Louvre.
Trying to create
Man,
the universe
awesome.
To bring me. Yeah. And so,
pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. So I'm working a little bit more with that. And, but I was taking pictures, family and friends throughout the years. And while I was in podiatry school in Chicago, and just after that, I happened to be able to bring my camera into a couple of rock concerts. So you may have heard of these people, Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, the Eagles, Jethro Tull, Emerson, Lake and Palmer. And I was getting up to the stage with my camera and taking great shots. And I had just thought them as just to do, and I had put them away. And then some people, when I moved to California, started seeing them and said, "Wow, you're a great photographer." I had never considered myself a photographer, just somebody having a good time. and with my craft with photography, but because I'd spent so many years studying medicine and being a doctor, I never considered myself a photographer as well. And that's sort of like where it started taking off, that other people started recognizing some of the work that I was doing for fun.
Yeah, that's great, man. We actually have, you taught me, spent about an hour teaching me more about taking photographs of people. I don't know if you remember it at all, but it was on the set of
Cost
of Living, and you showed me, look, you want the eye of the camera to focus, you want everything to go this direction, and this is how you see. And I've never forgot any of that, and I put it to use. I've become a better photographer after just a one-hour session with Mark Valinsky. So you must have something going on there.
Well, you must be quite smart to be able to listen and do it. A lot of people, that's what they don't understand. I see it all the time, even in people that shoot for Getty and Wire Image, and they're so-called great photographers. You know, some of them are. They never really watch the background. They never really watch the angles. And I consider myself more of a sniper photographer. I predict and I wait for the shot. Where a lot of these guys, they'll hold down the trigger of the camera and they'll shoot 6 to 8 frames per second. And then pick, you know, at the end of the night, they'll have a couple thousand shots. Well, I learned on film it was very expensive not to get the shot right the first time.
Sure.
And these are things I talked to you about, is the background, the perspective, you know, creating and composing your shot. It's not just pressing the button.
With truly great photographers, you do see what they're trying to show you. It's something different than just, hey, snapshot random with my iPhone. That's what you taught me.
It's like Rod Stewart says, every picture tells a story. And when you're a photographer or even a director or writer in the film industry, television, these stories of utmost importance, because that's what truly communicates. And a photographer has one image to tell the story. And somebody, a cameraman, a writer, producer, director, he has many images, but they must be able to be tied together to tell an interesting and compelling story. And I think that's the difference between an amateur and a pro. The pros really study what they're trying to communicate.
Yeah, and it's amazing to me that the truly great photographers can get all of that across to someone who's looking at their pictures in just one frame, because we have trouble doing it, you know, in the movie business. We have trouble doing it with an hour and a half. So, you know, just one frame of saying, check out this picture, check out what's going on here. That's impressive stuff, and it takes a special eye.
I don't know. To me, it comes natural, and it's fun.
Yeah.
That's why I do it.
That's great. That's great. Mark, do you have any cool stories from the red carpets? Like, who's like somebody who's really cool on the red carpet?
Well, probably the most fun I had is a couple of times was just after the red carpet. I was actually shooting a red carpet many years ago with Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes. And I had met Tom before because I worked on War of the Worlds, and I had worked literally right next to Spielberg and Cruise. And I mean literally right next to him. And then I met Tom a few years later on this. And while Katie was on the red carpet, and that's an interesting story too. I took a beautiful picture of Katie Holmes. I've got some great pictures of them together. They're not together now. But I go into a local store and I see a magazine, People Magazine, and I swear to you, Mark, it was the exact same shot that I took on the cover of People Magazine. And it must have been one of the photographers in front of me that knew or had a relationship with people that got to him before me. I swear.
Wow.
And that must have been, you know, a $50,000 shot. And I had it. I just didn't have the resources to get it to the People magazine. But it was very interesting. And I went inside the lobby And there's Tom Cruise surrounded by all his people, you know, next to the popcorn stand off to the side of the counter there. And I just got a little bit bold again and walked over there. You know, some of the security tried to stop me, but I raised it and got my hand and got Tom's attention. I said a few things to him, but he recognized me. And he said, that's okay. Yeah. He actually came out from all of the security. And we had like a 15, 20-minute conversation face-to-face. And nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
I've been around a lot of them, and some of them just don't want to talk to you. But it was a nice, long conversation, and I had to excuse myself. I figured I was taking up all his time. And I went to the washroom, and I come out of the washroom, and all of a sudden I see Tom Cruise walking towards me. And you'll know the other person that we were with on Cost of Living. I was with Cece Perkinson, and I introduced her to Tom Cruise. But he came. It was a 75-foot counter in one of these big, you know, premieres in what's known as Westwood. And he came over specifically to talk with me more again and to be introduced. I mean, it was just amazing.
That's fantastic. I've heard one of the cool stories. Yeah, that confirms all the rumors I've heard. Yeah.
He really is a cool guy, and he's taken a lot of beatings because, you know, sometimes, you know, I even learned this in medicine. When you're the lead Indian, you've got the most arrows in your back.
That's true.
Nothing you can do
That's
about
so true.
It. But,
yeah.
But also,
yeah.
As I used to tell my kid, only the lead elephant gets the good view.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, juxtaposes. There you go. I like it. Now, Cece, man, I haven't talked to Cece in a couple months. She's a wonderful person as well. Very talented.
Great girl.
Very talented lady.
Yeah, cool.
So, okay, moving on from photography. Actually, we're going to go backwards a little bit. Because I don't know, do you still practice medicine in any capacity?
No, I lecture and consult from time to time, but I sort of like burn my bridges purposely. I've had my California license since 1988, and about maybe 2010, maybe 5 years ago or so, I just did not do my continuing education and let it lapse. But
sure.
I'm still out there. I have 8 published research papers and 12 teaching videos. So there are still people using my work, and you may or may not know. I was on the first surgical team for the People's Republic of China in 1983 to teach what I was doing in developing minimal incision foot surgery. Now you hear about it, you know, the one stitch, or they use it on the knees and the spine and everywhere else. But actually, podiatry had developed it in the 50s, and I helped further the cause with research and bringing it to China in 1983, and I've been there 5 times for that. So my name is out there, my work is out there, but I don't actively practice it anymore.
Okay, yeah, now that's called minimal incision or minimal traumatic, right?
Minimal incision, minimal traumatic, minimal invasive. They have all these different names for it. But
yeah.
I used to correct major foot deformities through an 1/8 inch incision. And while I was in practice, my mantra was pretty much no pins, no wires, no casts, no crutches.
And so
it's a very, very unique procedure that actually takes a lot of perception more so than carpentry. And so that's why difficult for people to do and understand. But for the last 10 years of my practice, I never gave out any pain pills because I never caused any pain.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's quite a difference.
Out of curiosity, what got you interested in podiatry, the foot?
It was a simple twist of fate. I was always interested in medicine and science, even as a kid. And one day I was sitting in, and I had always thought that I'd be literally a brain, a heart, or a plastic surgeon. And one day I was sitting in calculus class, and don't ask me how I got through it, but I got all A's, never understanding what the hell that is. Seriously. And this is at the University of Buffalo.
I'm with you.
And
I was a math major, Mark, and then I got to second semester of calculus, and I got a political science degree instead. Yeah, my motto was poli sci, why try? You know, so actually do an impersonation. I do an impersonation of a recent political science grad. It's really good. Here, I'm going to do this for you real quick. Here it is, impersonation of a recent political science grad. Here we go. Would you like fries with that? There it is. Thank you very much. Very proud of my education. What do you do with a poli sci degree? Well, you make movies, I guess.
Right. You become president. Make documentaries. There's good stories. Oh.
Yes.
I was very active in politics. I was president of my class back in high school in student government, and I was president of various areas and organizations as a podiatrist. There's a lot to be said for good people making good changes. So. You just never know, Mark.
Well,
and that is actually one of the reasons I wanted to come to film, is because I saw the platform was worldwide.
Sure, yeah.
And I really felt that it would take a little bit of time, and I was willing to give that time, and I was willing to give up doctor money to get into this field and to communicate to the world. And that is still one of my purposes.
Well, you're the kind of guy that will chase a dream, that will, that wants to do what he loves doing, and that's kind of what the show is about. So that's a very encouraging thing to hear, you know, to be successful at different levels in different areas. We want to encourage people on the show to continue to chase dreams. I think mostly because I want to feel better about myself and my chasing dreams, and so it helps me to hear others doing the same thing.
More by helping people than just trying to do it for personal reasons, selfish reasons of, oh, I need to do this. And like you mentioned when I talked with you about photography, I learned so much when I lectured around the world for podiatry and when I talked to people about photography. And it's just part of my personality. I actually do like to help people, especially if they listen and they're successful. And it's much more than just deciding, well, I want to go after this amount of money for my own sake. And so bringing other people along and teaching people and making people's lives better, like you're doing with this show, people realizing that their dreams can come true if they just put some energy behind it. I think what you're doing is great as well.
Well, thank you, Mark. That means a lot. We're trying to make a difference, as little as it may be. Well, tell us a little bit about China. How did you end up going to China so often?
Well, I was very well known in my field and what I was doing, and it was, again, a group that I was one of the officers in. And a Chinese physician was actually making small incisions and drilling holes into the heel bone to let the pressure out to release people know that if they have them, heel spur pain. And so we had invited him to the United States, and he invited us back to China. And there was a group of us that was invited, part of the leadership. And again, talk about chasing your dreams. I wasn't part of the original group, but another podiatrist who was a friend of mine for personal reasons had to back out and gave me his spot. He talked to the board and highly recommended me and got that pushed through out of literally thousands of podiatrists. So I was selected, and I brought my camera with me too. So sometimes if you look on Facebook, in fact, there's an album there about China, and I'm working on a book called My Travels with China, and it's also on website, Mark Valensky Photography, just some of the images. But I actually, and I've got them in storage, I've got a lot of the images of me doing surgery in China, the other doctors doing it, what China looked like back in 1983. But also, in answer to your question, there are 25 original doctors invited, and some of them brought along their wives. Out of the 25 doctors invited, I was one of three invited back. The reason why the other people didn't get invited back, my opinion, is that they didn't respect the culture. They were the true definition of the ugly American who felt because they had been making a lot of money. I mean, one guy literally, he's like close to 300 pounds, very, very wealthy and successful in podiatry. Him and his wife bring in their Louis Vuitton luggage to China. I mean, the luggage alone was worth more than, literally what was worth more than the orthopedic surgeon would have made in 20 years. I'm serious. Just their luggage. And at one time, we stayed at the Presidential Palace. A lot of Nixon's cabinet was there when they were negotiating for China, and they were staying at the same Imperial Palace that we were in. It's truly an Imperial Palace. It's not the name of a hotel.
Yeah.
It was a whole...
It's not the one in Vegas.
It was the whole grounds of what used to be the Emperor's Imperial Palace. And
that's
where we stayed.
Cool.
It was very cool. And the things that I saw were amazing. And but, for example, these guys would go, this one particular guy, then they would get literally a box of 24 Snicker bars. And I remember this, a month. That's what the hotels would get from the United States because it wasn't open trade yet. So, each Snicker bar was like gold to everybody. This clown went and bought the whole box for himself.
Oh, my gosh.
Meaning nobody else at this hotel, nobody, including Nixon's people, couldn't get a damn Snickers bar. But this is their attitude. Whereas I immediately went to one of the local stores and bought a khaki green military outfit with a hat. I dressed like the Chinese. In fact, one time I got on the bus, they thought I was a guard, and they got panicked. And it was just me because I was wearing mirrored teardrop sunglasses, and I was a full Chinese outfit and things like that. And I actually spent time to learn Chinese, and I was broken, and I can't speak much of it now. But I really got involved in the culture also as a martial artist and a black belt at the time. I understood, let's say, the Oriental manners and ways and respect that these guys didn't pay attention to. So in answer to your question, why I went so many times is because I got invited.
Yeah.
Because I respected other people's cultures and the people. And actually, because of my work, they gave me the only honorary MD and visiting professorship in orthopedic surgeon that they've ever given anybody.
Wow.
And I have a certificate about that. So I have a professorship there in China and an MD, honorary MD degree in there. And they actually asked me around 1990 when I went to open up a clinic in Beijing. They wanted me to teach and open up a clinic. I had a couple of kids already, and China was a very, very rough place to live at those days, and I could not see living there, so I had to pass up. But if I, talk about simple twists of fate, I would have been there 20 years already or something like that, And it would have been a whole different dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Well, that what an opportunity, though. I personally love to travel. I love other people's cultures. When I go in, I like to immerse myself, and I like to learn, because bottom line is I was raised, I've lived in Seattle, and I've lived in Los Angeles, and that's it, So a chance to go, visit Seoul, Korea, and stuff like that, I want to learn what's going on. And why they do things and how they do things. So that's definitely when you travel, it's much better than being the American idiot, as Green Day would say.
Yeah, you do want to get. That's the other thing I used to do. I used to leave the tours and just walk the streets on my own and actually meet the people. And you'll see if you go to Mark Valensky Photography. I think it's Gallery 8, MarkValenskyPhotography.com.
Okay.
It's my travels in China, and you'll see some of the people on the streets and some of the ways they lived, and anything from extreme poverty to extreme niceness. And but to your listeners and to you, I've always had the philosophy, as Nike says, just do it. I always carry enough cash and credit cards that if I wanted to leave and go anywhere in the world, I pretty much could just take off on a whim. That's kind of like how China did. And in fact, I just made a decision, you're hearing it first, to post it on Facebook soon. But next week, there's an opportunity to go to a leadership course on a private yacht in the Caribbean. So I'm heading off for the Barbados and St. Lucia and St. Vincent Tuesday. And
wow.
That decision was made at an introductory seminar last week. So I just did exactly what I said. I got to go.
Awesome.
Here's the money. And next week
that's
I spend
great.
10 days in the Caribbean. So to your
yeah,
audience.
Yeah, that's going
to
be rough.
Sometimes, yeah, right. Sometimes it's just do what you're thinking about doing and figuring out the future after you've done it. But now you've got this thing underneath your belt. And life just gets a little bit better as you start following your dreams and actually doing them.
Yep. Yep. That's one of the reasons I wanted you on here is because you're not afraid to do things like that. Now, I would suggest, Mark, if you end up in Jamaica, that you don't stray from the tour because I did and I got kidnapped. That's a true story. I got
you're
kidnapped
shitting me.
In Jamaica.
It must have been, let's see, my kids were young, so must have been about 1983 or something like that. I had a timeshare in Ocho Rios. So,
that's why I kidnapped.
Really?
In Ocho Rios?
I had my kids.
Yes.
They for some reason, with the kids were in diapers, for some reason, all my luggage with the diapers were lost until the day we got to the airport. They returned it to us, and it was their hint, don't bring your kids anymore. But I never had that problem. You got kidnapped?
Wow. Yeah,
you
should have called. I strayed from the group, and the resort we were staying at was able to negotiate my freedom, and then everybody at the resort got yelled at not to leave the resort, not to relieve the groups, and I sat there going, gee, I wonder why they're lecturing everybody on this. Yeah,
well,
that's
an interesting story.
Well, that's what I kept trying to tell my wife. She would be going, you can't do that, you're going to do that. And I'm like, yeah, but look at the story we have now. I got kidnapped.
Yeah,
you know,
right, exactly.
I don't see the value in this. I do not see the value in this.
I took my wife for the first time. I've been there a few times, but not in a long time. It was one of my favorite places to go, Ocho Rios. Kingston
yeah,
was very dangerous at the time because it was still very strong communist. But I go to Ocho Rios. I'm walking down the street, and I meet this guy. His name was Saul Bell. S-A-U-L. Uh-huh. He was from Minnesota. He was a retired optometrist up there. And he became chamber of, he's an optometrist down in Ocho Rios. He became chamber of the, president of the Chamber of Commerce. He invited me over to his house. He says, we're going to have a special guest, but I can't tell you who. And so I get there. His whole place is overlooking this gorgeous golf course there. Just valley or so. It's like, next thing I know, there's a helicopter landing. His friend was the Secretary of Defense for Jamaica, so I'm having dinner with a guy that I met from Minnesota who went to Jamaica to retire, who's best friends with the Minister of Defense for Jamaica. And so...
that's fantastic.
But I love
what are
Jamaica.
The odds? Only
yeah,
right. Only you, Mark, only you. That's
maybe
what
so,
I'm
I don't know.
So,
but it's out there.
Let's talk a little bit... Yeah, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about... You mentioned a little bit that you studied martial arts. Taekwondo, is that correct?
Well, I have black belts in judo, Gojo Shirai, which is a form of karate, taekwondo, and hapkido, which is like aikido, only the Korean form. So, it's in my blood. I have not been doing it as often as I want, but I hold a few black belts in it.
That's like somebody said.
It's just showing up and being there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's no different than getting through grade school. You're going to start out in kindergarten. One of these days, you're going to end up in high school, starting off as a freshman again. But the point of the matter is do a little bit something every day. Just be there with whatever, you know, you want to do, what you want to accomplish. But it comes with a start.
Yeah. Were you into martial arts when you were a kid?
You know, not really, but for whatever reason, I didn't know a lot of these things. I don't really know how I got into it. I did some wrestling in high school, but mostly lacrosse and soccer, swimming. So, and they did have a judo club, and I always wondered what was going on there because it was always held in a small room in the basement. but I never really did it. I don't know. I got involved very late in my life. Maybe actually.
Okay.
When I went to Ohio State, there was a chance to take, you know, like after class judo, and our instructor was a former Olympian, and he's a little guy, Air Force former Olympian, and he was a lefty and a little guy. But I took it, and I think that's where I got the bug. And then I was off of it for almost 6 years, and then I started it up again after I got out of podiatry school. And there are times I would even be 10 years off of it. But somehow it just got into the blood, Mark. I can't explain it to you.
That's great. You know what? But it goes to show you that even if you weren't into it as a kid or a teenager, it really is never too late. I didn't get into acting until I was 32 years old. And, you know, it's just people that don't be afraid.
I didn't get into acting until I was 50.
Right? See, we're talking to a guy who gave up, you know, being a doctor and making, as he said, doctor money for the sake of chasing something else that he loved more. And so people, folks, listeners, it's never too late. You might be thinking, yeah, this is good for everyone else. No, it's good for you. Check it out. Chase a dream.
Yeah.
We got a guy here who's done exactly that.
One of the things that when I was in Chicago, I don't know where I got all these good fortunes from, but things like this do happen to me. In high school, one of my friends was going to get into MIT, very prestigious technical school out in the Boston area, the Massachusetts area. And I go with him. And in fact, this is what really started a lot more boosting my photography, is we're at MIT, and I'm just wandering around while he's doing whatever the hell he has to do. And these are still wooden floors at the time, and the old wooden doors with the, you know, the glass in the middle of them or so. And I'm looking at all these cool pictures on the wall, and this little guy all bent over, maybe in his 80s or so, says, "Would you like to see how I did those, Sonny?" And I go, "Yeah." Now, the guy's name was Professor Harold Edgerton. It may not mean much for you, but if you've ever seen what's known as the milk drop effect, where the drop of milk hits the milk and it crowns, the bullet that goes through the car, or the bullet that goes through the apple, that was Professor Edgerton. He's the one that did the first photography of all that.
No kidding.
And it was sound back to photography. He took me, he took me into his lab where he showed me how the rifle was set up and how the apple was set up and how the cameras were set up to stop motion photography, basically, through strobes.
Wow. Well, that's what a guy to learn from.
Yeah, I know. I was like 17 years old. And another time while I was in Chicago, a couple times I went to see two people. Many of the listeners should know the names, but don't. One of them is Pablo Casals, a concerto celloist. And the other one is Segovia, a classical guitar.
Okay.
Extraordinaire. And they're sitting, these are the only people on stage at the Chicago Symphony. That's the type of thing that the level of performance that these people were at. And I remember watching them both, especially Segovia, play the guitar. And I was like eight rows back. The guy is in his 80s when I saw him. And I would watch his fingers, and I would hear 10 notes to every time I saw one of his fingers move. And this is in his 80s. So I realized that even if I started guitar now and lived another 40 years, I will be playing guitar, piano, or anything, and that's for 40 years. So it doesn't matter what your age is. It's like just get to it and realize that maybe you'll live to 70, 80, 90, 100. Think what you could do if you just started today with a couple of notes on the piano and not worry about how old you are.
Yes, that's a great point. Absolutely true.
Because you look at all we learned, we learned in high school or college or whatever in 4 years, or even in businesses.
That's true.
And so
that's
if you can learn that much in 4 years by just attending 8 hours a day, think what you could do in 30 or 40 years from now. So So even if you're 30 years old and you're 40 years old, that's 70 or 80. You still got life ahead of you, but now you're a master at whatever you decided to start today.
Yeah, there you go. That's great advice, and it makes me think maybe I should take those ukulele lessons. You know, I would love to learn to play the guitar, but I got the world's tiniest
hand. I got a harmonica in my car
with
me right now. We can just play. Yeah, I have a guitar, and a flute, and keyboards, and I want to learn them all. I just dabble.
Do you write music, Mark? You dabble in music?
No, I don't write music, but it does come out of me. So
that's cool.
I don't write it. I do have to get one of these programs that when you play, the recorder actually writes the notes for you, so that you know, so I can adjust it, or other people, or I can communicate to others. I know how to read music at a very remedial. You know, I know F-A-C-E, and every good boy does fine, the letters and the things like that. And on the guitar, I can figure out the chords, and I can figure out the mathematics of the chords, because that's music is very mathematical, believe it or not.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it is. It is. We had another guest that kind of talked about that, and it was very impressive to just to listen to it. No, music is really math, and I'm like, no, it doesn't sound like math to me. But then again, I play a lot of poker, which is math.
That I've got to learn. Yeah.
Hey, Mark, I used to give poker lessons when I lived in L.A. I'd be happy to teach you. No problem whatsoever.
I'd be happy to learn.
I'll trade you my skills for yours. How's that sound?
Well, I don't want to lose mine, but I'll learn from you. You can learn from me.
that's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm looking for. So let's move on now to modern day Hollywood. You started the Valinsky Media Group. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Uh-huh. Well, it used to be when it actually had its infancy while I was a podiatrist. I was actually working on a couple of movies there, took some acting lessons there. I was actually working on a movie called Genghis Khan, but the man has no socially redeeming values. And I started learning a little bit about Hollywood and getting screwed over, which. You know, same thing, anything. You play football, you better be able to take a hit. You get in the ring for martial arts, you better be able to take a hit. You get into Hollywood, you better be able to take a hit. And,
boy, ain't that the truth.
And it was first developed as Valcom Media, which is Valinsky Communication Media. And then it just, as I came here, became Valinsky Media Group. And it really combines a lot of the things that I do. And I think I was about to look for where I put one of my business cards. So on my business card, I put down film and TV and event production, photography, marketing and public relations, business consulting. So that's why I consider it a media group, whether it's books or whether it's events or photography or movies. And so far I've been mostly focusing on movies as opposed to TV. I don't understand that as well. But should. And so we're just out here doing the best we can. And things have actually started to turn quite radically only in the last couple of weeks. I mean, I had somebody call me up and said they have $5 million for science fiction and horror movies. So now that's a public announcement. Don't send me scripts, anybody, please. I don't read the scripts and I don't choose. I just package it. And that's another thing I did through the media group. See, I came out here to act, and then I realized most of the actors out here, they've had no business experience whatsoever.
True.
So they kept asking questions about how do I do this, how do I do that, headshots, how do I market, how do I, you know, what's my PR? And I knew all these things because I developed these skills as a doctor running and developing and expanding my practice. And so I found out that producing is very good because a lot, especially in the independent world, you know, as a doctor, I did everything, not everything, but many things by forms because they were repetitive. So I learned to put systems in, much like an airline pilot does. It doesn't matter how many years he's been piloting, he's got his checklist, and he'll go right down it to make sure that he doesn't miss anything. I'm kind of the same way. So part of the media group, I've developed systems, if you will, and even a thing I call a need checklist. So when somebody comes to me with a project, I don't care how great a storyteller you are about how many people you know and how many names you throw. Show me the contract.
Yeah.
I don't care if you come tell me you've got $20 million for a movie. I say, what's your banker's name and what's your account? All I want to do is verify funds. I don't care if you have $50 billion, but if you're telling me you got $20 million and you only got 19, I can't deal with you.
There you go.
So,
no, and that's
so
true in Hollywood.
People will eat up your time all the time so that you'll do their work to pursue their dreams. And I'm going, wait a minute, I got my own things I got to accomplish. And it's like,
well,
I got people come
to
me. What's that?
You and I need to take this offline because I have got some opportunities. Things have really taken off for me as far as the past couple of months. So we might be able to create quite a synergy here because I obviously know and believe in your abilities, and I think you'll like the business plans and the what I've got going. So anyway, we'll take that offline. People.
Yeah, I would look forward to it. You there? Mark, did we just lose you?
Mark?
Did we
just lose
I'm
Mark?
Here.
No, no,
I think
no.
We just lost Mark.
Hi, no, this is Joel, Mr. Hollywood. I hope
hey,
Mark.
Mr. Hollywood.
Hey, how are you doing, Mr. Valinsky?
Good, thank you.
I guess we lost
the other Mark.
Yeah, I hope his power didn't go out or something like that.
I don't know what to tell you on that, but are we still on the air?
Yeah, we're still on the air. So I wanted to ask you, what is the most demanding situation you have experienced while running your production company or media group? That's what I mean.
I would think the number of people that want to divert your time for their personal agendas.
Okay.
It's very difficult. And then they actually get mad at you. As this was about to explain to Mark, it's the personalities. And the only way you can, I think, in my own mind, the only way you can get things done is to focus on what you're doing. You can help others. But you can't fully sacrifice what you know is right to do for somebody else's agenda. And because they will, I've learned that energy flows in different, energy moves in different ways. One of them is a flow from point A to B, just like you're walking, from the sink to the refrigerator. And then there's a thing called dispersals. And in Hollywood, there's a lot of dispersals, meaning you're trying to get from point A to complete your goal, point to you and says, I got this movie I want you to help me with, or I got this project I want you to help me with, or I got this personal problem, or can you lend me money? Those are dispersals. They take you off the track. And then there's a thing called a ridge. And that is sort of like if you were walking again from the sink to the refrigerator and somebody built a wall in front of you. Now, there are actually personalities out there that will do anything they can to stop you from reaching their goal. That's how they get their jollies.
So what I wanted to ask you, since you just explained all that, can you name a time when you experienced this type of situation? Was it a certain, like, a producer, director, just a company that was kind of, like, trying to just, pull your leg and just try to make you go one way while they go the other?
Well, it happens all the time. I mean, it's just all the time. I mean, it just happened to me a couple of days ago. People gave me a couple of scripts on when I told them, from looking for scripts on horror films, and these are my friends, and I asked them about them. They gave me scripts. I said, listen, I'll read your script, but it's like, $250 an hour, and then if you want an opinion, that's another $250 an hour at least, minimum. But what are you talking about? Says, you want me to spend an hour or two reading your story and then give you an opinion about how to fix it, and there's no compensation here? I've got 2 hours or 3 hours of my time, but I'm trying to do 5 photography books and make movies too. No, it's only a script. Why don't you just read it and just give me your opinion? you know, I learned a long time ago when I went to Ohio State that the difference between an amateur and a professional is not the skill. Okay?
Okay.
And this came a lot. Okay? The difference is a professional gets paid. There are a shitload of professionals out there that can't take a picture or can't make a movie. And there's a shitload of amateurs out there that should be winning and have won a lot of awards, but they never get paid.
Oh,
so it's
yeah,
never
there's
the
just,
skill.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that.
And I learned that because when I went to Ohio State, there's this thing called the AAU. And you see it now. It's called the Amateur Athletic Union at the time. And it's the reason why college players can't get free dinners or free cars anymore. Because the minute they accept some type of compensation, they're considered a professional and therefore are thrown out of the college leagues.
I've heard about that. I've heard about that. I think that's just ridiculous, but that's just my two cents.
No,
yeah.
I agree with it because the alumni is making a goddamn fortune off of them. And you know, you've got slave labor down on the college fields, and they're getting their bones breaking and their dreams broken. So that the alumni can have a good game and the colleges can make millions of dollars off of television rights. I mean, just take a look at how much the Big Ten get. You know, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan. Come on now.
It's disgusting. That's why EA Sports quit making a college football video game, because players were standing up and saying, well, you're using our likeness in the video games and we're not getting compensated.
Right. But if they get compensated, they're considered professionals.
Yeah.
And professionals can't play college football. And so,
you asked
me about these things when people ask me to read scripts. I said, no, I'm a professional at what I do. I just had somebody, I met him, and he's got like three different businesses. And he calls me up last night. First he texts me, can we talk? I'd like my headshots done before you go to the ship. And I says, okay, I can do that for you. I just have to meet you earlier in the morning. And then he goes, and I said, listen, I normally get this price for it, but you're a friend, and so this is the price. And he goes, wow, I thought you would do it for free just to get the exposure. And I had to hit him between the eyes. And I had to simply say, listen, my exposure is the Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, Steven Spielberg, Michael Bay, Tom Cruise. Nobody knows who the hell you are. He says, well, I have a friend that will do it for the exposure. I says, she probably needs the exposure. I don't need the exposure. I'm a professional. You're going to have to pay me. I gave you a good deal. I says, I'll tell you what, take the next couple of days to think about it. That's my price. And if you want me, give me a call back and we'll make an appointment. And the deposit on that is this. What do you mean you want a deposit? He says, if you change your mind, then I just gave you 2-3 hours of my time. My time is my money. So you asked this about the Hollywood scene. This is the Hollywood scene. These are the dispersals that come into your life with people think they're doing you a favor. Because if you do this for them, you're going to be exposed. You know, I go to a shitload of – I'll keep my language nicer. I go to an awful lot of Hollywood parties. Not one of them has made me money.
Yeah.
I go because it's social.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. And by the way, thanks, guys, for continuing the show. I got knocked off for some reason. Yeah, the lights are flashing. It's a nasty storm right here up in the Seattle area right now. So,
hey, come back to L.A. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, don't tempt me, man. Don't tempt me.
No, come on.
I'll be back someday. I will be back someday. But, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that you talk about what you guys are talking about, because when I was in L.A., learning the whole scene, I got taken advantage of, I'll admit it, you know, a number of times until you finally build up this, like, Mark, like you're talking about, to say, look, man, my time is my money. And if you're not getting that, you're probably getting screwed over by someone else, especially in Hollywood.
Yeah. And you also, you know, I learned so much in podiatry. When I first started out, I didn't have any clinics, and talk about getting screwed over. My own relative said, you know, come into the practice with me and don't worry about a thing. So I took it for his word I'm in his practice for about a week, and he goes, you know, Mark, I don't think this will work out. And he was getting jealous because I was bringing in patients. And I had just dropped all other plans based upon this guy's word. And he's like a second cousin, and, you know, his grandfather and my grandfather were brothers. And it's like, next thing you know, I'm out on the street. So now I'm looking wherever I could find a job, and typically it was public aid clinics. Well, this dermatologist had owned this clinic, and this is a good story. One day he came up to me and said, listen, you got to stop working for no money. You got to stop treating, you have to stop treating people that will never pay you. Because one time I, in the clinic, this guy gives me a sob story about how little money he has, and he's just on welfare and what have you. Can I please reduce my price? I reduced my price in half of the surgery I just did on him. He pulls out a wad of hundreds that must have been $2,000-$3,000 in his pocket. Now, I'm just starting out. I didn't have that much money on me. And he just peels off a couple $100s like it's nothing to me and makes me feel like shit and drives away in a new Cadillac. And I learned.
Yeah.
Your prices
shameless,
are your prices.
Shameless.
People can afford you or they can't afford you. And the other thing that they taught me is that likes will refer likes. I'm shortening the story. It has to do with a little cockroach in the corner of a clinic, and the cockroach is going, help me, help me. And I'm going to shorten it up, and this is what the dermatologist had told me. And so I look in the corner. I had nothing to do. I'm a new podiatrist. I pick up the cockroach. I put him on the chair. He goes, my feet hurt. Can you help me? I fix his feet. And he goes, wow, I feel great. Next morning, the doctor comes to his office. His office is filled with cockroaches. Likes will refer likes. If you do a good job for somebody who's going to take advantage of you and not feel you have any value, you're going to get referred from that same person.
Point.
Oh, Mark will do it because he's good, but he'll do it for free. He did it for free. So now I say this is my price, and I get referrals who pay me. Because now, and the same thing as the doctor again, and I'm saying these things for your audience too. Because whether they're working at McDonald's selling fries or not, and I tell my kids, I says, listen, you're a great salesperson. Why are you selling this item? Why don't you sell Rolls Royces? Because if you're going to sell Chevy, you're going to make a certain commission. If you're going to sell a certain percentage of Rolls Royces, you're going to make a different commission. You may make the same commission, but now it's on a $400,000 car instead of a $20,000 car.
And
if you're making 5%, I'd rather make 5% of $400,000 than 5% of $20,000. And you're talking to different people. You're meeting different people. So I have learned to continue to leapfrog myself upward the best I can.
Yeah.
And I am nowhere near the top, nowhere near my goals are, nowhere near where I expected to be after all this time in Hollywood. But I won't give up on what I know works.
No. Yeah.
I can't.
No, Mark.
You can't keep doing things for free.
You are pretty much unafraid to change things midstream, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because you know your life experience isn't just a bunch of random stuff. It's stuff you've made happen. Maybe not exactly specifically what you were looking for to happen, but because you worked hard and because you became good at all these things, that's why, you know, you have grown in all these different areas. And that's very encouraging to someone like me and to a lot of our listeners. You know, it's a matter of putting the time and getting the experience. Absolutely. Yeah.
I was a Boy Scout and I've been in the woods, and I've climbed a couple of mountains here and there. And one of the things I've learned is always know where the mountain peak is. Always know what your goal is for now. And every now and then you're going to go down into a valley or behind into a forest or behind another mountain. But you must always know where that peak is, no matter what, as we were just talking earlier, no matter what dispersal, no matter what stops come in your way. You must always flow energy towards your goals. And the more energy you flow towards them uninterrupted, I mean, they will get interrupted, but you start to cut the percentages down. I personally found the more things come to you faster and faster. that are your goals and not somebody else's, or not somebody, you know, what your mom or dad or cousin or husband or wife or kids want you to be. You know, you cannot compromise yourself. You cannot seek friendships. You know what I'm saying? You can't give up yourself to please others, because you're going to end up old and not knowing who the hell you were in the first place.
If you don't follow what you're passionate about, you are going to get left in something like that. Absolutely true. Well, Mark, as we wrap up here, can you tell us, if someone wants to get in touch with you to bring you on as an actor or for consultant or whatever, whatever you feel like you want to throw out there, how would they get in touch with you? Now, you mentioned Mark Valinsky. Is it Mark Valinsky Photography?
Right, and I finally, because of all the things that I do, I put together a website that's just simply markvalinsky.com. So that's M-A-R-K, V as in Victor, A-L-I-N-S-K-Y.com. And so the different things that I do, people can do, and it links you to other websites. And the email should be there. You can get me at info@markvalinsky.com. And that's the best way.
There you go.
Because another thing I don't do, again, with diversions, I don't answer my phone unless your name is there. And your name doesn't get there easily. And so I get a lot of phone calls. If somebody wants to call me, which I'm not going to give out my number, but if somehow they get it, they should know. They should leave a message, and I may call you back. But the best thing is usually emails.
Yeah.
And that's info at markvalinsky.com.
Info@markvalinsky.com.
Info@markvalinsky.com.
Yes. Okay. So anybody out there needs a good actor, this is your guy. Diverse. Yeah, absolutely. And anyway, Mark, you are a very inspiring individual, and I was pretty excited when you agreed to come on the show. And
pleasure, Mark. Great seeing you.
You're going to bring in a lot of
the audience doesn't know I was working at the Washington State Fair, and Mark and I haven't seen each other in years. And he graciously showed up with his wife to say hello, and this is where this all came about just a couple of months ago.
Yep.
So thank you, Mark.
Everything happened for a reason. You bet. Mark, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for all the encouraging words and advice. And I'm going to be in touch, because I've got some pretty cool stuff to chat with you about that I think you're going to like. All right?
Sounds like fun.
All right, Mark Valinsky, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on, Mark, and we'll have to do this again. You have an open invitation. Anything you want to promote, you just let me know.
Well, like I said, anything you want to do, I'll help.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Really appreciate
take care, Mark.
It. You're a good friend and an all-around good guy. All right. Mark Valinsky, ladies and gentlemen, just a true Renaissance man and all-around good dude. He's been an encouraging guy in my life and definitely on the show as well. Now you can understand why I reproach him with such high regard. Just a cool guy. What do you guys think, man? Is he cool or what?
That was awesome. That was so cool.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He's got all kinds of great advice that you know what? Sometimes we hear advice and walk away, but this is some advice you should think about and that you should take. He's done it all, and he's good at everything he's done. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was God. All I gotta say is just wow. That was just awesome.
dropping everything as a successful surgeon, and saying I'm gonna go pursue filmmaking and acting. That just amazes me. But that's the kind of guy he is. It's like, I really would rather do this, and so he does it. And he grabs everything like a pit bull, you know. It's a lot of fun.
That is really inspiring. That's just, wow.
He's a great dude. He's fun to hang out with as well. I knew it immediately that I liked him when I asked him one question about photography on the set of a feature film we were making. And he said, well, let's sit down and let's talk about it, because I can't just give you, you know, a two-minute answer. And we sat there for an hour as he explained things to me. And it was, I immediately went, wow, this is one cool dude. This is a good guy, and he's got advice to give, and it's good advice to take. It's not a nickel's worth of free advice. It is $1 million worth of free advice. So Again, Mark Valinsky, thank you for coming on the show. You are an awesome dude. We'll talk soon. We only got about 5 minutes left. Jeff, J-Dub, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, so what's going on, man? I realize we have a lot of listeners locally. I thought maybe you'd want to throw out a couple of places you might be this week if you want to say hi to some of, if you guys out there want to say hi to the King of Music, Jeffrey J. Dub Weist, or maybe you can let us know where you're going to be at for karaoke and so on this week, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. So this week, Tuesday, today, I'm going to be at Four Corners Bar and Grill in Maple Valley. Wednesday and Thursday, I'm at Uncle Moe's Snappy Inn in Renton, Washington. Let's see, Friday I'm off, so don't bother. And Saturday I'm back at Corners in Maple Valley.
There you go. Go out and you can actually meet one of us huge superstars from the radio in person. You know, we don't do a lot of public appearances because we're so major league and so important. But you can actually go meet J-Dub. You know, I think, what do you charge, like $10 a minute for chatting with you in person? Never mind.
I've given a lot of thought into it, and I've lowered it down to $3.95 a minute.
Oh, well, that's a steal.
99 cents afterwards.
And there are gift cards as well. You can get J-Dub gift cards for conversations with him, and we sell those on www.yougottabekiddingme.com. Anyway, we're wrapping up here. Joel, we got about 3 minutes. Can you give us one more piece of Hollywood info in under 3 minutes?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, of course, Jolly Goodman. I was about
of
to
course.
Curse, but...
Well, you don't have to. I can go on.
Okay, hold on. I got something. Don't. Come on. Oh, okay. The next four people that are going to host Saturday Night Live are going to be Ryan Gosling, Chris Hemsworth, Tina Fey, and Amy Poehler.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's interesting. Yeah, some alumni.
Always. Yeah, and Chris Hemsworth, last time he did it, he was pretty darn funny, and I believe this is Gosling's first. He was great. I believe this is Gosling's first or second time hosting.
Okay. Cool.
And,
well, that's gonna be fun.
And one of the December shows is gonna have Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, wow. They're going old school on us. Right on. Okay. Well, that's good info. Appreciate that. And I guess it's time we can go ahead and wrap this baby up. It's Tuesday. It's 1:30. It's time to do the little wrap-up. I do not have a dumb as a Martin. We don't have time for it anyway. So you'll have to tune in next week to hear Keyboard Cat laying us off. For J-Dub, for Joel Casey, and, of course, for our amazing guest, Mark Valinsky, this is Mark A. Johnston signing out for the week. Please join us next week. We're going to talk to Christina Marie about the Dysphoria Project, which is an anti-bullying, pro-positive body image project that is taking place currently in California, but should be all over the place very soon, including hopefully Burning Man this next year. And we'll talk to her a bunch about that next week, as well as a possible other guest that I have not confirmed as of yet. But stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to the show, whether you're live or on the podcast. You can find us. Feel free to listen to this 7 or 8 times. I mean, only if you have no life. Nah, you can do it if you have a life. Take it along with you. J-Dub, Joel, it's been a pleasure, gentlemen. I'll see you guys next week.
Love you, buddy.
Later, brother.
All right. You got it. All right, fellas. You have a great evening. And to the rest of our audience out there, thank you. God bless you. Have a great day.